so.
Whoever you make sure that you make the phone, you just.
Okay. Well, you know, you should be away by now.
Yeah, I need to leave like around, you know, I can get it at 10 by 4.
Okay.
Well, should we just go?
Is yours on?
Will we?
Oh, sorry, we changed the mind. That's not crucial, is it?
No, not at all.
Okay, well, as you can see, I've about a Sarine boy. I've written actual speak about the patch of 1969 by Joseph Boyce. I'll just bring up a bigger image of that. You can all have a look. So on the left hand side of the screen is, it's not a good image, is it? It's the pack in its installation in Germany, in the museum from which it's currently on loan, and on display at the Tate. On the right hand side you have it in its original installation in Edinburgh, and there's the marvellous Mr. Boyce in his felt hat. Let's move on. We'll give you a brief chronology of Joseph Beuys's life. He was born in 1921 in Krefeld, in Germany.
And then from 1941 to 1945, during the Second World War, he was a pilot and a radio operator in the Luftwaffe. He was actually wounded 5 times in his active service.
After the war, he took up study at the State Academy of Arts in Düsseldorf. That was between 1947 and 51.
And in 1953, he had his first solo exhibition.
Between 54 and 56, he fell into a deep depression, stunned by his illness.
And in 1961, he becomes the professor of monumental sculpture at the Düsseldorf Academy.
From 52 to 64, he has a brief involvement with the Fluxus movement.
In 1963, he actually shows the first work to include animal fats, which becomes one of his motifs throughout his life.
He then participates in Documenta 3 in Kassel in 1964.
And in 1967, he sets up the German Student Party, which is his first foray into politics.
In 1968, he declares that art is life.
And in 1969, as we've seen in the previous slide, he makes the pact. Which is a piece we're going to talk about.
Yeah. By 1971, he set up another political organisation called the Organisation for Direct Democracy Through Referendum.
And in 1972, he exhibits the Organisation for Direct Democracy Through Referendum at Documenta 5 in Kassel.
And then again, by 1974, he's still working in politics, and he sets up the Free International University for Creativity and Interdisciplinary Research.
And basically, he ends up making art until his death of heart failure in 1986. So, I'm just going to talk formally about the PAC as a work of art in itself. We have a Volkswagen bus in the background there, out of which are spilling 24 sleds, on which are each has a roll of felt, a block of fat, and a flashlight all strapped down with webbing. The sleds themselves are actually a multiple. Now, Joseph Beuys developed a series of multiples throughout his career using different objects, some remnants from his performances, but he would create additions of these pieces. The sled itself, in this case, was an edition of 50, 24 of which are in the pack, and there are various others in different collections around the world. Each one signed with his brown paint signature on the runner there, which actually is a bit unclear. It says Boys and it has a cross where the two bits of wood meet. The multiples were a method used by Boys to reach the greatest public possible with his artworks. But he was also an inveterate recycler of his objects. So in this case, we actually have one of the multiples being added to his vitrines, which are self-contained environments, essentially. He produced lots of these vitrines with different objects in. This one has an example of a sled multiple, as well as a piece from 1965 called Fax Filter. In his life, he produced a huge number of these vitrines.
Then we'd like to go on and make an iconographical reading of the past. But before we do that, it's important to start to relate two things about Boyce. First of all, there's a foundational myth upon which he bases all of his work, which accounts for the use of stealth and flat throughout his career. So as the quote makes clear, he was shot down as a pilot during the Second World War in a snowstorm, and came down behind enemy lines. So the official report says that he was found by a German commando search team, but according to Boyce, he was rescued by a tribe of nomadic Tartars who wrapped him in felt for warmth, for healing properties, and felt for warmth, and therefore saved his life. So there's no real kind of confirmation of whether this is true or not, but regardless, the fat and the felt become the dominant feature of his work, and he's by using fat and felt, he's kind of taking on the status of the healing properties, the warmth, and associating that with his work, not just with his work as well, but I think the fat and the felt go towards creating the myth of Boyce himself as a shaman and a healing figure. And if you notice in the quote, there's a point where he claims that the Tartar says to him, "You are not German." And we'll see later on that in some readings that becomes important. But if we just take a quick look at his political beliefs as well, his important statement was that every human being is an artist, so he has this belief in the innate creativity of every person. From that, he says, political expression comes through the expression of art, so making art becomes a way to struggle for political freedom. And furthermore, the struggle for political freedom becomes a work of art in itself. So he said, only art is capable of dismantling the repressive effect of the senile social system in order to build a social organism as a work of art. So, making art, art brings about political freedom, and the struggle towards political freedom is art as well. And this is what he calls social sculpture, which is this kind of his main concept in this respect. We should note as well that he's vehemently anti-state. We could call him an ecological or a non-violent anarchist. But let's move back to the pack, and we'll start to make a Boycean iconographical reading of it.
So Boyce said of the work, this particular work, "This is," and I quote, "this is an emergency object, an invasion by attack. In a state of emergency, the Volkswagen bus is of limited usefulness, and more direct and primitive means must be taken to ensure survival." Thorsten Scherer, who's actually the publisher of the Athena website, which is the Boyce online archive, run by the Oxford Brookes University, characterises this piece as, and I quote, "The only way to get ahead is to use a sled. But it seems to be a dangerous project. We're in the darkness and have to find our way with flashlights. And we have felt with us that may give us shelter and fat that may heal our wounds. The Volkswagen is important too. First, its direction is opposite to the sled, but it isn't possible to get any further with it. Second, the Volkswagen is a democratic product, a car for the people, an invention of Hitler, essentially. Looking at the pack, we see no signs of human beings, but this Volkswagen bus leads to the conclusion that it is each and every one of us who's involved. The most important fact now is that a driver, a leader, a single Führer who knows the way has become obsolete, a subject of history, as well as political parties who lead people. Everyone has to be its own leader, on his own sled." So in this reading, Boyce turns away from the state fascism, and the day is saved by recourse to myth and the healing properties of fat, felt, and art.
Yeah, so that's a kind of, I suppose, a positive reading that kind of takes into account Boyce's political leanings, and the state of affairs post-war, and moving away from this kind of totalitarian regime. But there are more negative readings. I wanted to bring in two readings, one by a critic called Donald Cuthbert, and one by Benjamin Brooklow, both starting from a psychoanalytic basis. Let me just move on here one moment. So in Donald Cuthbert's psychoanalytical reading, he characterises Boyce as a rejected and unloved child, and we know from Boyce's own words that he had a poor relationship with his parents. From this basis, he assesses the whole of Boyce's work, perhaps reductively, as an attempt to repair this psychological deficiency. Moving on from this, he says that in Boyce's self-mythologizing project, he becomes a shaman and a shepherd. We often see in his performances he holds a shepherd's staff. And he makes the connection saying that if Boyce is shepherd, then the sheep are his audience, and specifically the German nation. I'm going to quote Cuthbert briefly. He says, "The artist was to care for his audience, which would reciprocate by flourishing under his protection. The psychic drama of warmth and intimacy between artist and audience bespeaks the healing intention of Boyce's art, its therapeutic mission. He wanted to give his German audience the care that it would cure, that would cure it of its post-war feelings of deprivation, isolation, and hurt inflicted on it by the desperate failings of the parent state." So he relates it to the post-war historical situation, and makes a parallel between the psychological scarring of Boyce as a child and the psychological scarring of the German nation post-fascism, and stresses the healing intention of Boyce's artworks, both symbolically through the fat and the felt, and in reality through his political programmes. Benjamin Brooklow takes this a bit further, and is a bit more critical. He centres on the Tartar myth, and he says that this myth is there to try to give a transcendent healing quality to Boyce's art and elevate his status as a shaman. And he focuses on this tale by Boyce of the Tartar saying to him, "You're not German." For Brooklow, this indicates Boyce's desire to repress the scars of German fascism, and which, obviously, in the psychoanalytic reading, obviously, resurfaces later on. So this repression returns as a kind of axis upon which all of Boyce's work pivots. So if we try and think about the pack in the light of that, rather than escaping this situation through the sleds, I think Brooklow might say that there's a kind of a burying of the head in the sand, that there's a retreat into mythology and spiritualism rather than dealing with the actual social and historical context of the work and of the artist. this is probably going on a bit too long, so I'll just kind of try and be a bit more concise. Just to relate Boyce's political work, I think Brooklow would say that ultimately Boyce is aestheticising politics. And if we remember that Walter Benjamin talks about the way fascism aestheticises politics and communism responds by politicising aesthetics, we mentioned earlier that in 1972 the Organisation for Direct Democracy became an exhibition in and of its own right. And I think that's the case with saying that Boyce, through that and through his self-mythologising, an insistence on authorship. For instance, these are all signed, there's 26 signatures in this work, ends up aestheticising politics. In fact, Foucault goes so far as to call him a proto-fascist. I'm not sure I would go quite so far, but it's interesting to think about how far some of the things in Boyce's work appear to be politically progressive, but may actually be a conservative impulse. This idea of authenticity particularly, I think Benjamin would call a conservative impulse, which leads on to Ed's museological analysis.
Okay, so I'll now look, we'll now return to the Tate Gallery itself as the temporary custodian of the Tate, and how they're presenting it, and consequently how they're addressing the Boyce myth through that presentation. The current installation at Tate Modern places the pack in the idea and object section of the collection displays. The section is described, apparently somewhat loosely, considering Boyce's inclusion, as centering quotes on the emergence of a new generation of artists in the 60s, often described as minimalists, whose work embodied ideas of objectivity and impersonality as a radical alternative to the highly subjective expressionist styles of post-war painting. The text goes on to describe the inclusion of important antecedents for these innovations, such as constructivism and ready-made, which are laying the groundwork for conceptual and installation art. Now, while Boys owes a lot to Duchamp and the ready-made, his inclusion in this section still seems somewhat arbitrary, given that he is not an antecedent to the minimalists, necessarily, and could hardly be said to be objective, perhaps. A more in-depth analysis of the Tate selection of works for the section may bring out some method for his inclusion, but as it stands, the text seems somewhat irrelevant to Boyce himself. The juxtaposition of artworks under this somewhat spurious categorisation has further significance for the reception of the works, and I'll deal with that next. The first stage in the Tate's presentation of Boyce and his work is through their decision to display the works at all. Obviously, this has been assisted, at least partly, by the works' availability as leftovers from the major Boyce retrospective held at the Tate last year. And so, effectively represents an extension of that exhibition, which in itself was described as the first major survey exhibition ever to take place in the UK of Boyce's work. So at least in this country, the show was instrumental in bolstering his reputation and bringing him before a wider audience. The pack itself is not part of the Tate collection, but is on short-term loan from the Staatliches Museum in Kassel, in Germany, as indeed are all the pieces in the room in the Tate which this sits at the moment, apart from the felt suit, which is from the Tate collection. So there's just one piece in that room which is actually in the Tate collection. So once the decision was made to show the works, the next layer of presentation takes place in the installation of the work, including their arrangements in the room, their physical relation to the wider Tate collection, and the interpretative material provided, which would include the wall text and the audio guides, etc. So this is a little plan of the room. The boys' pack is on the top right of the room. It's a set of vitrines, which I mentioned earlier, and a couple of small wall-mounted constructions and a felt suit, and those are the articles in the Boyce room that are taking notes. The room is a long, thin space with two sort of through entrances, i.e. those which are part of the continuous progression from room to room in the collection displays. And then there's a third non-through exit or entrance at the bottom into a dead end, which gives access to a dead end. The pack is a long thin piece and it's been put into one corner of the room, and effectively looking at the movements of people, it's effectively embraced by the movement from the two through routes through the room. Just have a little diagram of the kind of routes that we have. So the that's a schematic for the further public through the room. You essentially have two different types of visitor. The solid line is a person who's ostensibly interested in the work. Up at the top left you have a dwelling point which is next to the information display, the information board. And then a wiggly line as they go through the room. And the dotted line is someone who's just trying to get out. So, but you see how it kind of embraces the pack through the room. There we go.
The dotted line's me.
So, okay, then next to yeah. Okay, looking at the Boyce room in relation to the other rooms of the Tate collection. To the east, which is actually to the top, we have a small darkened room showing Gary Hill's remarks on colour video, and to the south, which is the large room on the right, that is the around minimalism room showing archetypal minimal works of Giles Lewis Morris. And the dead end room at the west, which is at the bottom in this picture, is named Image Stroke Text and displays works incorporating the written word, including art and language, Joseph Kosuth, Marcel Brutes, that sort of thing. So then moving on to the actual interpretative texts which are provided by the Tate. They're quite limited, But don't miss the opportunity to repeat the foundation myth, which Ian mentioned earlier, of the plane crash, the rescue, the Tartars. They also talk about survival, anthropology, personal obsessions, and, I quote, the chaotic and dynamic energy which boys considered essential in order to bring change in society. The text also raised questions about another aspect of many of Boyce's works, the process of degradation, degrading. He also, I'm quoting the text here, he also made works using organic materials such as fat, wax, or honey that were prone to deterioration, seeing this process of transformation and change as essential to his work. However, the collection and display of these artworks necessarily worked to preserve them for the future, and this would seem to run counter to this statement. Indeed, as an example, the Tate has recently had to deaccession their original felt suit, and by another because of irreparable moth damage. So the one on display here is the new one that they just bought. In that room, sorry, someone's been in that room. So we also have a situation where works incorporating animal fat and chocolate, for instance, are progressively decomposing and soaking into their wrappers, the wrappers that hold them. Any iron objects in the pieces are rusting, which can clearly be seen on the box rather than bust. Actually, there's a lot of rust. I'll just move on to the Tate's reinterpretation, actually, for the previous one. So, it is apparent that the Tate is helping to preserve and perpetuate the existing myths through the text applied to orient the audience, but it also constructs, by doing this, a new set of associations by, through the presentation of the works, which subsequently become part of the never-ending accretion of meaning to artworks in general.
Deal with the shop and the ready-made, that Boyce just takes the ready-made
and turns it into this really simple idealist metaphor. I think this idea is represented in this object, and this object stands for that. We're interested in juxtaposition, but the tape doesn't really get into that.
I mean, it's like, it's very little of the text, basically. You know, the works, the text, the captions. I listen to the audio guides, which they give more that way, but I doubt it somehow.
I did notice when going through this, on one side you've got a video in one room, and then you've got the film in the other room. Do you think that this noise makes any kind of difference?
That's right, there's a Bruce Nauman in the image stroke text room just below, which is the no one with the two clowns jumping up and down, which is, it's been...
Is it a protest against both? I think it might be.
A number of times we went down there, they turned them off, so we don't know who did that, but I'm sure for the image later it's quite annoying.
Because I've actually found standing in front of the boys, you have just noise.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is how the works are now received. It all adds to the reception, the interpretation, essentially, of the works because of their positioning in relation to all these other works, which don't necessarily have much of a relation.
I'm interested in the book article that you mentioned. There is really voice sort of styling himself as a shaman. You mentioned that he wanted to heal people of post-war. What was it? Post-war isolation and
whatever.
Yeah. There's all these. Then there is a piece called "Show Me Your Wounds."
Mm.
I mean, there's all this thing about wounds, but it doesn't appear that he's ever once mentioned the murder of Jews or anything in the Holocaust. It's only the German wounds that need to be.
That's right. He seems to completely turn away from the realities of that into this bizarre place.
Yeah.
I kind of find Custis really, really reductive. I'm not really fond of just taking everything back to the mother and father. But, you know, his work really just does become about him.
Does Custis also critique that? Or does he mention, you said Buchlo...
Buchlo critiques it more strongly. Custis tends just, is kind of illustrating... Buchlo really does almost follow a postal fascist in the end. This just comes back at even more strongly. Which I think is interesting, just this massive identity to create himself. Doesn't seem to match up with his actual political work. It seems odd.
And interesting that so few critics seem to take that up, because your reading of the Tate supporting the myth, they had a show not that long ago,
mm-hmm.
which also didn't seem to deconstruct the myth much.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that Buchlo seems to be this lone figure.
That's right.
Really strong in the teaching.
Terry Atkinson has also had a go at this. He calls it an article called Why Speak? That's about this relentless self-promotion.
Yeah. And I think Gustav Metzger also.
Right.
Do you know Gustav Metzger? He's an artist who became very well known also in the 60s with this autodestructive art, where he shot acid onto canvas, nylon. So he had
a
discussion.
I mean, it's funny, every time I've seen an exhibition of Weiss, there's a reiteration of the myth, and there's sometimes a suggestion that, we don't quite know if it's true or not. But that, so it's stated, it's never taken into account with what the implications of that are. Which sort of seems strange.
Maybe it's because they're
just
calling
it
a lie. He's quite a big person to call a lie. And now he's dead.
Well,
I think a myth isn't a lie.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a myth at the point that it's the truth in his work.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I think even Buchlo says that in one sense, that's the strongest thing in his work. There's a kind of an authenticity to it, that even though the myth isn't factual, he sticks to it, and it becomes this really solid grounding in his work. But then, of course, he rejects it on a social and political ground.
But would you be able to summarize in very few words what do you think personally of the work? I mean, what?
Of the past?
Yeah.
Or of what?
Was it in there or was it missing? I thought it was.
Was what in there?
Your own.
No, I shied away from it. The past. Yeah, I find it hard to divorce it from Boyce's other reviews. Every book I find is symbolism is juvenile, and I think he's failing to deal with the issues that other people were dealing with at the time that were maybe more important. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it's very seductive, although I find that whole messing is a little. I mean, I just look at it on a formal level, I think. I don't really get involved with the politics. We're kind of two ends of some kind of spectrum, bizarre spectrum. And I can see it appealing to teenagers and people like that. But I mean, that's really. Yeah, I mean, where does that leave us? I don't know. I don't mind it. That's work.
But then my next question would be, why did you shoot it? Why did you choose it?
Oh, because there's lots to get into.
Yeah, it's
amazing. We stand in front of the Baldessari piece and I thought.
Yeah, we kind of
thought about that. I said, yeah, I don't know, I just felt there was more to get our teeth into, really. I mean, I quite liked the Baldessari's work, you know, but I felt like there was one thing going on. I felt that there was one really strong interpretation of the Baldessari, which is this kind of postmodern intertextual reading, and I felt beyond that, not so much.
Seems completely open to interpretation.
The Baldessari.
The Baldessari, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas voice spoon feeds you.
Yeah.
Interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps we caught that. Took it easier.
I think you did say, but I can't remember. What are they doing about the rotting stuff and the rusting and the rust?
Well, I don't know what they're doing about the pack, the rusting of the pack. I presume it's been stabilised in some way. The rust, you can put stuff on rust, it's rusting. But because it's owned by the German museum, I don't know the background to that. But there was a report recently from the Tate about their felt suit, where about having to deaccession their existing felt suit and buy a new one. They come up for auction, I guess, every now and then.
So many multiples of these.
It is a multiple.
But they're still made by Boyce himself? The new ones? Or
I don't think there are new ones. I think they must just come onto the secondary market every now and then.
They just
come available.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a certain number made, and there's the circulation of the
ring. It's probably they were produced and eaten by
Boyce. Yeah. Good.
There's actually two.
Yeah. Go on.
No, this is a side note. There's actually two felt suits in that display. There's one in one of the trims as well. I don't know what the situation with that one is. It looked pretty beaten up when I was down there. So, I mean, there's the whole thing of just reusing it over and over again, never facing that thing.
I don't know. Just that you can buy into him as well. The idea of being able to buy his clothes, you know. Just this perfect expression of this.
If it goes to the Tate shop, you can buy a felt postcard in the installation.
Really?
Which is a voice multiple.
I was thinking, I don't know if you saw the Warhol exhibition at Tate a few years ago. There was a huge and quite late portrait of Boyce by Warhol, and it was all black with diamond stuff. It was really really beautiful, first of all, but at the same time a bit shocking, and actually they were not friends, but they knew each other,
right.
And Warhol was
see that at the end, do you?
I mean, they, how to say that? They admired each other.
Yeah.
I think it would be very interesting to pose these two. I mean, in a way, they are the last two great artists. I mean, after War and Boys, it's difficult to think about any other artist who worked in that way about the construction of his own image as an artist. Mm. But they do that in such a different way. But
then, you know, so we're talking about the YBAs, you know, the persistence of this idea that of this mythological artist, you know, and you know, given that there's been that theoretical deconstruction of those kinds of positions so long ago, the fact that it's still persistent is amazing. And if you go into art schools, you know, it's still going on, it's still happening. And that's one of the reasons I don't like it. Is this, I think it's dangerous.
I was just wondering if by
having
both.
There is someone else. I think we need to go.
We need to go.
But I think Kiefer is also an artist who took on that fashion and has built that myth around himself.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether
he's agreeing. Just that in the more about these the issues or whatever.
But he, it's through him that all these big issues are brought to the world.
Yeah.
So
I wasn't sure the best video.
We can do that later.
Let's do
watch it.
We've got
that.
And fight for it.
It's ready to go.